I don't know how the battery seems to be holding up.
All right, it's recording. So we're talking about benefits, required and voluntary, and today we'll probably focus on required. However, I wanted to take a second to finish up on one thing back here on salary. So just make a small parenthesis, right? Salary or just pay and pay discussion. And that's the idea of hourly pay. And the concept of overtime, particularly since I hadn't talked about it, and it's such an important topic in general. The concept here of overtime was originally put into law under the Fair Labor Standards Act. Fair Labor Standards Act, 1935. The Fair Labor Standards Act does a lot of things. Talks about minimum wage, hours that miners can work, miners being younger people, not coal miners, those kinds of things. Okay, so there's a lot of stipulations in there, but the one about overtime is the one that, in my mind, is the most important. And what we're talking about here is overtime comes from 40-plus hours. So any hour past 40 is going to get, as you know, time plus one-half in terms of hourly rate. So if you're getting $10 an hour, as soon as you hit the 41st hour, you're now getting $15 an hour, correct? So the concept here is that those who are not in management, those who are on an hourly wage will get overtime. If you get overtime, get equals non-exempt. That means you get it. In other words, you are not exempt from the Fair Labor Standards Act. If you are exempt, you're a manager, you travel a lot, and no one can keep track of your hours, really. In that situation, you are exempt from the Fair Labor Standards Act. I got there. So that's exempt.
If you have your own business and you want to put everybody on a salary just to put your books right.
Okay, here is a standard situation that I usually need to talk about. Obviously, if you have to pay overtime, as any red-blooded American, you don't want to pay that overtime. Screw over the employees. What do you want to do?
Keep the money yourself.
Keep the money yourself and spend it on buying politicians. Of course you do. So how do you go about doing that, considering this situation? What would you do if you had all these employees who were going to have to get time and a half after 40 hours?
Don't let them work overtime.
You could do that. Or more easily,
hire new employees.
No. Just reclassify them. Make them all management, or make them all exempt from the Fair Labor Standards Act requirement of time and a half after 40 hours. So what managers have been doing all these last years, right, in an attempt to screw over their employees and keep more money for themselves, is to reclassify their employees as being exempt. So naturally, there's been a whole shipload of legislation on this particular point. And this particular point has been litigated many times over to, in general, say, forget about it. Forget about it. There, got it. So that the constriction on this is very, very tight. You can usually not get away with this. And so they'll look at what if you say this employee here, right, our janitor, is exempt because he's part of the management team for keeping the place safe. He sweeps up around it and he's part of the management team, so he doesn't get time and a half or whatever. This has been stretched ad infinitum. In general, you can't get away with it, nor can you get away with calling your employees independent contractors, which, particularly so in the construction trade for so long, is a common situation. You need 10 carpenters, you need some sheetrock people, you you bring them all in and you call them independent contractors, then you don't have to pay nothing. You just pay them an hourly rate and send them home. You don't have to worry about Social Security or any of that other stuff, right? That also has been highly litigated. There's a list of roughly 20 items that determine whether or not a person is independent contractor, such as, are they supplying all the tools that they need? If so, that's sort of an indication that they might be an independent contractor. Do they determine when they want to show up at the job? If they determine it themselves, then they might be an independent contractor, et cetera. So there's some pretty tight regulations, 20 of a checklist, I think it's 20, that make it very difficult to call normal workers independent contractors. But anyway, so what we're looking at here then is this idea of overtime and what you can and can't do about it. In general, I would say the only way that you're really going to limit your overtime is by not having people work overtime. There's been tons of attempts. Students are a perfect situation. I mean, ending number of students have told me that they're not getting overtime where they work. I had a kid that was detailing cars at one of the dealerships, and he wasn't getting overtime. He's working a lot detailing these cars that go out on the used car lot. They weren't paying him overtime. Anyway, I told him to go complain. So he went and complained. And the guy said, yeah, I know. We don't pay anybody overtime. We'll pay you, but don't tell anybody. So what did he do?
Told everyone.
Yeah, went and told everybody, of course. I mean, get realistic here. So, I mean, this is just common. So they just figure you're students and you're ignorant and who cares. So you'll take whatever they give them. All right, so just keep a memory about this particular situation, the Fair Labor Standards Act, and what they all allow you to do in terms of paying people and overtime considerations, and the idea of exempt versus non-exempt. All right, so now we can go on to benefits here. In general here, as we're talking about benefits, I want you to remember that everything that a company does should be linked to their
strategy
to achieve their goals. How can required benefits be a strategic tool? Well, they can be. This can be a strategic tool, and certainly voluntary benefits can be a strategic tool. So we'll talk about that as we go along. What are the voluntary benefits? What are the required benefits?
Health care?
Benefits.
Vacation?
No health care. Well, the ACA. Now we have the Affordable Health Care Act. Yes. So there is that, the Affordable Health Care Act, which has been passed and still is under a fair amount of controversy, though people that are getting it in general realize that they're doing better than they were doing before. I heard that there are indeed substantial number of conservative politicians who are refusing to condemn this, you know, getting off the condemning bandwagon because they know that their constituents are really glad to get it. All right, what else?
Vacation. Paid time off.
Overtime.
What's depressing?
That is depressing, right. Psychiatrist that comes with it? Yeah, it's both. That's required. Everybody gets a psychiatrist. What do we got here? Yeah, urinary tract infection. That's exactly what it is. And everybody gets one. It's a required benefit. Come on over here, right, get your injection, so to speak. We better not go too far down that line. But yes.
I have no idea.
Unemployment.
Sorry. Unemployment insurance.
Wow.
And WC. If you're an architect, you're going to say water closet, right?
Workers
meaning
comp.
Bathroom. But instead, it's really
workers' comp.
And finally, you will not know, probably, FMLA, Family Medical Leave Act. We'll talk about that. All right, so these are the required benefits. I really, at this point in my career, can't talk to you too much about the ACA, except that, of course, it requires you to get insurance through a health care provider, third-party provider, right? All other countries essentially do it through a central government situation, which is obviously a lot more efficient since it's not a profit-making deal. But I just waste so much time ranting about the government. But in this particular situation here, that's the way it is. And a lot of companies are just saying, well, we're going to cut our hours back so we don't have to pay it. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's real interesting. Or if at least they're sort of halfway honest, they'll say, find out what it's going to cost you and we'll give you that much money, something along that line. Or if they're actually a legitimate sort of place, then they'll just pay it, and that's the way it'll be. Your employees will have health care. I'm not going to say too much more on that. Social Security. Social Security is a kind of thing where they want you to worry about it. It's going to be broke. It's going to be bankrupt, et cetera, et cetera. There are tons of things that are going to keep it from being bankrupt. It's not going to be bankrupt. Right now, nobody contributes to Social Security over an income of about $120,000, right? If you're in a really bad mood and you're feeling down about how things are, why would you say that people that make over $120,000 do not have to contribute to Social Security?
Because they got enough money to retire now?
Because they have enough money to
start a 401k or retirement plan.
Survive.
God, you guys are so innocent. So that they can buy the politicians to make sure that the votes go against raising the Social Security minimum, maximum, obviously. So they just use their money. They say, well, instead of paying Social Security on my $8 million a year income, I'll just use some of that money to make sure that every congressman I know doesn't vote for it. Seems like a good investment, don't you think? Sure. Pays off very fast. That's what happens. But eventually it will pay off. That's going to happen. That it goes up a little bit every year, but not much. And it's still capped. It shouldn't be capped, obviously. People that make $5 million should have to pay it. 7.65%, unless they're unemployed, unless they're not working and have to pay the full 15% or some such. Somehow they should pay, but they're not. So it's a situation where the money goes into a pool, right, which the employee is contributing at 7.65 and the employer is contributing at 7.65. And that mounts up over the years, and based on your work record of how much your income was over those years, then you're going to get a draw out of that pool. It's amazing. You know how much I'm going to get out of this? $3,200 a month. That's not chump change. Well, unless you're a politician or Ron, Mitt Romney. It's not chump change. Jody gets $1,100, so we'll get $4,300 a month.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. I'm not complaining. Now, the question is, if I'd taken that money on my own and invested it, would I have come out ahead?
Maybe.
Maybe. Right now, they're effectively giving you 8%, because if you take your money at 66, then you just get a certain amount. But if you wait till 70, you get an escalation of that 8%. That's a good investment, 8%, these days.
Yeah,
considering, exactly. So I still think it's a pretty good return, because it doesn't really cost you that much to invest, and there it is in the end.
Wait, I have a question. Why does she get less? Is that like personal?
Because, no, it's not personal at all, because I made three times what she made.
Okay.
She was making 20, she was making 30, and I was making 110 or whatever.
Okay.
So, yeah, it adds up a lot more when you have a more high-paying job, obviously.
Yeah.
So a lot of people use that as their living wage, which is certainly not necessary for us. But it's a lot of people, it's what they're relying on to live, and yet when it was originally passed, it wasn't supposed to be that way.
Mm.
Interestingly. How long was it originally supposed, how many years after your retirement were you statistically supposed to live back in 1935?
Three
years. So you would be collecting Social Security for 3 years. And guess what it is now? 20, something like that. I mean, 66. A lot of people live to be 86 now. Lots of people. So there is a strain on it. On the other hand, they can fix the strain if they ever really feel they need to. But it's pretty remarkable, in my opinion. Plus, it has survivor benefits for your kids if you die before the kids are, 18? Does anybody know? I think it's 18.
I was
Pardon?
I would assume it's still 18.
They have medical coverage. If you're really in bad shape and it's going to continue for a period of time, you'll get some money out of that. So all in all, what we're looking at here is really a pretty good thing, and I would encourage you to contribute to this. I know it's a pain in the butt, and you can't afford to do it right now, but it adds to your work record. And the money that you put in now, you know, 30 years from now, 40 years, 50 years, however, whenever that you're allowed to start collecting, will go into that work history, and you'll look better for it.
If you have your own business and you pay into it,
you pay for everything.
Yeah, 15%. But you don't, you're not allowed to collect. My neighbor next door had his own business for 15 years. And
he was putting into it each month?
He was putting into it, and he was had himself as an employer. He wasn't taking a draw, or as a employee. And he paid into it all that time, and when his business went under, it's not Social Security, it was unemployment insurance.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't get that because he owned the company.
Right, and it's through no fault of your own, supposedly. A person can collect unemployment through if they've been laid off through no fault of their own. But if it's your own business, whose fault is it? Your own, right? So it's sort of tough. But Social Security, sure he would have gotten it. I feel sure.
After I started speaking, my mind clicked, and I realized I was talking.
That's fine. All right, so Social Security then depends on a work record. Our son has a nanny for our granddaughter. Have I told you about our granddaughter yet? Okay. Well, she now has a nanny, which was a huge traumatic event for us. Jody and I just went into shock over the idea of someone else holding our granddaughter for a whole day at a time. It just doesn't seem possible.
Or something like that, right?
Pardon?
She took her to the beast, didn't she?
Yes, and sent
right.
pictures back.
Right.
We can always tell when it's her taking pictures because the baby's hair is combed, has a little ribbon in its hair, maybe it has a little flowery dress on. That's somebody else's baby. Ours is wearing her hair a huge mess, big rat's nest, and Carhartts. That's our baby. Okay, but anyway, she has a different view of how babies are. That's fine. But my point is that she made a strong pre-employment demand that Social Security and withholding taxes be paid against the money that she earns from Rye for nannying the baby, which I think she should be paying for herself. You know, she should be paying to nanny our granddaughter in any case. So what we're looking at here is she's taking full advantage of a long work history to put every penny into Social Security that she can. That's smart. And I would encourage you to do it. Yes, it's extra paperwork and whatnot, but it's worth doing. Get it done. All right, unemployment insurance in general. Then. Unemployment insurance is the idea that you have been laid off through no fault of your own. In other words, you can't quit and then collect unemployment insurance, technically. Most places have a wait period in that situation. It's usually that the company had to cut back and you got cut. But unemployment insurance is a pool of money that's created by the employer contributing into a state-run pool of money that then is taken out to pay people who have been laid off. If it's a very long period of time that people are laid off, it usually only runs 6 months is the normal span of this, the allowable span, but in a very bad situation, it will be extended. And if there's a shortage of money in that state pool, the state can appeal to the federal government. The federal government will put money into that pool and allow benefits to be continued up to a point. But then eventually, they shut it down, just saying that they can't do it anymore and that everybody will have to go out and cook hamburgers or something. So unemployment insurance is varying state to state about whether or not there's a waiting period to collect, whether or not there's a waiting period if you actually have instigated the layoff yourself by saying, I quit, right, or whatever. So every state is a little bit different. So no matter where you go, make sure you understand what the layoff procedure is before you decide to walk out the door because you deserve better, whatever that means. Workers' comp. Workers' comp is the idea that you are going to be made whole, in other words, put back into your original financial and physical condition as you were before you were hurt through some sort of job-related injury. Please note the job-related injury aspect of this. You can't throw your back out bowling, and then, unless it happens to be a company event, you can't throw your back out bowling and collect if you're on your own free time.
Okay. But if you're on, like, the property that you work at, I had an example. Where I interned with Liberty Mutual, we handled kind of stuff like that. And there's a worker comp claim to where a lady got out of her car and she slipped on ice on the work premises.
On the work premises?
Yeah, she was going to walk
in. She's covered.
But even if you're just on property, you don't have to be working on
it. It's up to them to keep the lot safe. So it'd be just like, you know, you're a homeowner. Somebody's walking down the sidewalk and they slip and fall on your sidewalk. You're liable. You're supposed to keep the sidewalk clear for people. Depends on who you are. Are you the walker or the homeowner? Mm-hmm. If you're the walker, it's not dumb at all. It's wonderful. If you're the homeowner, well, you don't like it.
Well, they weren't supposed to be on your property, though.
But it's a sidewalk.
Exactly the point.
You're supposed to keep it clear.
You're saying that if I'm in my, like, I'm going home this week, and if I go home and I'm just walking around, it's snowing in Charlotte, and I just walk in front of my neighbor's house and decide I just want the money, and I just trip and fall and break my arm on purpose, I can blame them.
Have you yelled out, see, I broke my arm on purpose to show Dr. Fox what a fool he is?
No, but like, I'm
no?
a poor college kid.
If you did
money.
That, I probably wouldn't work. No, my opinion is you're going to get it.
You could get it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because there's ask somebody. You've got to know lawyers. Ask them.
Both my uncles are lawyers.
Yeah, ask them. My opinion is you're going to collect.
Now, they're Colorado lawyers. Does that change it?
No.
Okay.
That should be the same. Same is true, like if you have roots that grow under your sidewalk, you know how it picks up the concrete,
mm-hmm.
right? And somebody's walking along and they hit that and fall on their noggin, right? And it makes them stupider. Well, they should be able to collect because it's a hazard associated with your property. But I'll ask them. I'm curious to hear what they say.
I mean, the only problem I see is if I do that, then they can come back and just do the same thing. And
it's never ending.
The suits would even out.
But workers' comp here, workers' comp has some really strange things happening with it. For example, a guy claimed that the no smoking policy that the company had was making him hyperactive and he couldn't think and couldn't stay calm, and so he had to go home and take off a few days and calm down.
There's a bunch of work, like I work at IHOP, and a bunch of people say that, like they're like, I can't work, I haven't smoked in like 3 hours or something.
So,
they walk
do they file?
No, but they'll just...
Technically, they could file.
They'll force the manager to like give them a break. They're like, I need a break, I need to smoke now. If you want me to do anything...
Why don't they just take nicotine pills? What about those vapor things?
That would be way, way, way too easy.
Yeah. The vapor nicotine patch sounds like such an easy solution.
The nicotine patch?
Yeah.
How do you smoke those things? You roll them up really tight, and then you light them? How do those things burn?
They're plastic. They probably would burn.
They actually are more toxic than the damn cigarettes.
Probably. Well, whatever. So what we're looking at here, then, is a lot of interpretation. Workers' comp claims go before a board, typically, to investigate for the legitimacy. They're often inspected. In other words, investigators for the insurance company goes out, because it is an insurance policy on which you pay a premium, and of course if you collect, if your employees collect too much, your premiums are going to go up. So they want to make sure that these are not fake injuries, and so they'll send investigators out to see whether you're, you know, surfing in Hawaii when you said you had a bad back or something. Yeah?
Do they normally drug test? Like, but then like at McDonald's, like if someone like slipped and fell, like they would drug test them.
Drug test after the effect.
Yeah.
They're going to do everything they possibly can to avoid the claim. So, yes, I think that's certainly a reasonable way of looking at it, and probably pre-screening for jobs, too. In other words, when you come in the morning, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of you are going to be subjected to a daily drug test through computer-based coordination, you know, aligning two lines within a short period of time, which is an indicator of being, you know, influenced by drugs. And people don't want you on the job if you're influenced by drugs, obviously. You're unsafe. So workers' comp as a normal premium, required situation, required benefit with which you pay premiums, are going to be clamped down so those don't go up. And, of course, as a competitive advantage, what are we talking about here? I mean, go down the list. How would you take Social Security and make it into a competitive advantage for yourself? Remember, gross. Various things that you can take out pre-tax. This is the net pay. And the 7.65 from company and from you are taken out of this. So, how does the company make this into a competitive advantage?
You mean from other companies?
Against other companies.
Take it out before?
Pardon?
Take it out before.
Take out as much as you can here. Right.
Yeah.
So, contributory things like 401 plans where people are contributing in, that comes out pre-tax. Prepaid lawyer things, prepaid anything comes out of this. And that drives this number down. So companies are being very creative about how to rack stuff up here so that this number gets smaller, which cuts their pain. And that becomes a competitive advantage if they're very good at it, and a lot of companies are. Unemployment insurance, how do you keep that low? Temp employees, right? So you hire temps to fill in where you think you might have to lay people off over the next few months, because temps just come and go, and you don't have to pay for that. Workers' comp, make your place safe so that people can't get hurt, and then investigate every possible claim that you can to keep make yourself competitive. So these, at least, are tools by which you can compete with other organizations. If it's carefully done, you're going to be advantaged. Family and Medical Leave Act, by the way. The Family and Medical Leave Act was put in place by Clinton first couple months he was in office, which looks at the idea of people being able to take off from work in companies with 50 or more employees for a period of up to 12 weeks, over the course of a year. We have a lot of time here. Supposedly for family-related issues, without pay, typically. So what we're looking at here is for somebody to tell the boss, my spouse is sick, or I've got a family member that needs care somewhere, or whatever.
My wife had a baby.
Pardon?
My wife had a baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have to work a year before you're eligible for that?
Well, I think it is a year. I was thinking it was. I think it is, but I'm not sure. I'd have to look it up. But it's a rolling 12-week period here. In other words, it rolls around ahead of you, but you can get up to 12 weeks within any particular 360-day period of time. No pay, but no loss of benefits, no loss of your seniority in the organization. If there's any kind of group bonus that you were a member of and you've taken off, you do not lose that group benefit, whatever it is. Let's say that you're working in a group, a team, and the team somehow gets some sort of benefit award for their good work, right? You would be entitled to that as well. So the idea being here is to not punish people for taking time off. It's obviously a good thing for a lot of different people. The Family and Medical Leave Act does not cover people who are in the highest echelons of the organization. They're supposed to be indispensable and they can't possibly leave. It's a matter of opinion, I guess, in that sense. So these would then be the required benefits. How much do these cost? Well, if you were to take all these benefits, also the voluntary, which is variable, but these are fairly fixed, what percentage of your compensation dollar, which is benefits plus pay, what percentage of your compensation dollar would you guess is benefit derived?
20%?
30%. Sometimes almost 40%, depending on the organization, between 30 and 40%. So it's an extremely high amount of the compensation dollar, yet many companies do not explicitly explain to employees how much money they're putting into their benefits. And when they don't explain that, they're losing the attractiveness of their organization. In other words, if the employees don't see how much money is being put in for these required benefits plus the voluntary benefits, the company isn't getting any kind of allegiance from their employee, or as much allegiance as if this is completely explained to them. And the employees say, geez, that's 35% of what I'm earning. This is pretty good. But companies quite often don't explain this, and it's a mistake not to explain it.
The Army does.
Pardon?
When I was in the Army,
mm-hmm.
we didn't get paid anything. And
right.
if you take it to your hours, you're making cents on the dollar.
Mm.
But every year the Army puts out this thing, and they say for your house allowance and your food and
right.
all this other stuff,
mm-hmm.
If you were a civilian, you'd be making like $50,000
a right, year. Right, right, right. Yeah. And so this kind of thing as an attraction to your company should let people know this. Obviously, mostly you hear about voluntary benefits, but you should listen to this, too. I mean, yes, everybody does have to offer these, but a lot of companies don't explain the value of these to their incoming employees, and they ought to, in my opinion. It's this whole idea of equity, you know. What am I putting into the job? What am I getting out? It's not just money. It's also the benefits, et cetera, promotional opportunities, et cetera.
Does severance pay fall under unemployment insurance, or is that more voluntary?
Voluntary, for sure, because severance pay is not required by law. So it'd be voluntary. All right, that's enough for today. We'll do the required on Tuesday and finish up Thursday.